Welcome to another edition of the Minnesota Beercast. I am Drew. That's my co-host, Schmitty.
Hey, hey.
How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, good, good. Excited. I got a vacation coming up.
Yeah.
Here next week. Yeah. Tomorrow's my last day at work before a nice little 10-day vacation.
Get any brewery tours planned?
Well, I'm going to Western North Carolina.
Yeah.
To a town called, a little bit outside of a town called Franklin. And I have done my research.
Yeah.
There are about 6 breweries all within a, you know, decent driving radius of where we're staying. So I imagine I'll be at all 6.
The first day. What do you do the rest of your vacation, Drew?
Go back to all 6. Over and over and over.
Awesome, man. So, yeah, sounds like fun.
Looking forward to trying those out. We'll be there for about 6 days. North Carolina has some fantastic beer, so I'm in addition to checking out the tap rooms, I'm also looking forward to checking out the local liquor store.
See, I would just find all the local barbecue joints and just make people bring me beer. I'd be like, hey, I'm here enjoying barbecue. I hope some local beer just finds its way to me. Maybe some spirits.
I'm sure that'll happen as well. Would you not visit the breweries, the tap rooms?
I would.
Well, then what are you pushing back for?
I'm just saying. I'd have to, because we argue. That's what we do. It's kind of our thing.
You've got this like trigger inside of you. You don't know what else to do besides push back.
No, I'm not pushing back.
Well, here's what I do.
I just like barbecue, that's all.
This weekend, also very much looking forward to Saturday. We're going to be heading up to Elk River for the Lupulin IPA Invitational.
That should be a good time.
On Saturday, we'll be there recording a show at around 1 o'clock or so. I think we're going to get started.
That should be a blast.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We'll be at the ERX Motor Park in Elk River, the 2019 Lupulin Brewing IPA Invitational. Tons and tons of great breweries there. The lineup looks spectacular. So swing on up to Elk River this Saturday. The weather should be nice, and say hello.
Yeah, no, friend of the show, Jeff O'Brien, is going to swing by and talk about some legal changes that have happened recently in the Supreme Court and how that could affect some local, entities here in Minnesota and really across the nation, how those changes are going to impact the local beverage scene. So that'll be a fun conversation with him.
Yep, that's, Saturday in Elk River, and we would love to see you. So come on up to the Lupulin Brewing IPA Invitational.
Should be a good time. Let's get into today's show. We've got a full house today. We've got Christian from Lakes and Legends. We've got John Langang from Dangerous Man. We've got Eric and Kaylee from Mighty X. How is everybody doing?
Oh, wow. That applause is unnecessary.
We have a very
doing real good here.
We have a very engaged studio audience.
I guess it's a hop centric show today because everything that we're doing kind of revolves around Mighty X and their, I guess, well, not everything, but I kind of want to, it's all going to kind of spiral off of your partnerships and relationships with the two breweries that are with us today. But for the folks who don't know, I mean, I guess it's been a while since you've been on, Eric. Maybe you and Kaylee can walk us through Mighty X hops and what you guys do and give us an intro.
Hey, yeah. Well, this voice is Eric. For the podcast listeners at home. So I'm Eric. We're from Mighty X Hops. We have 80 acres of hops in Foley, Minnesota, which is just outside of St. Cloud. It makes us the biggest hop farm from Michigan to Idaho in the entire center of the country.
That's pretty big.
Well, it's only big here, because out west, the average of a hop farm is like 800 acres, so we're a big fish in a real small pond.
So 800 acres is the average out there, and yours is how big?
80.
So, I mean, it's Minnesota big.
You owe me a beer, Kaylee. Oh, it's Minnesota big. It's Midwest big. We're big.
That sounds like a beer name.
It's Minnesota big.
That's cool, though. I mean, there's a history in the Midwest of hop growing and hop agriculture, and it really, I mean, for those that aren't aware, once upon a time, we grew a ton of hops here, right?
That's right, yeah. Well, Wisconsin and New York used to be the big producers of hops, and especially before refrigeration, hops were all coming from the dude down the street's place. If you needed hops for your beer, you had to get them close. You couldn't ship them all from Germany.
What happened?
Downy mildew and prohibition. So disease and government.
Yeah, that'll kill anything.
That's right. Well, those two are pretty deadly.
So yeah, downy mildew and prohibition, really those two things hand in hand kind of really killed the hop production. It is kind of fun if you really go exploring. Sometimes you can find still some wild hops out there. It's always kind of cool. None of them, I've yet to have any that taste any good.
We had a couple on the home farm in Ham Lake where we first started, and we grew them out, put them in the field, put them on trellis, and we never harvested them because nowhere in their cone production cycle did they ever smell good. It was always like, that smells like green. Yeah, right. Onions, green. All right, okay, never mind.
Yeah, it smells like kind of by the river. It doesn't really smell like anything I
it's
want.
It's kind of like the Mississippi on a slow, hot Saturday.
So you guys are bringing it back, though.
We got a soundboard over here, Kaylee.
Kaylee soundboard, line gang. Boop, boop,
boop. You guys are bringing hops back to the Midwest, though.
That's right.
What's how long have you been at this?
Since I came on board in March, kind of, Eric and I sat down and we really wanted to figure out what makes us different. And something that, you know, came about was the new brewer edition, where they focused on local ingredients. And they really, really, you know, they wanted to let people know that, hey, you know, one way breweries can differentiate themselves, as, you know, more and more are opening every year, you know, how to differentiate yourself, use local products, use what's around you. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's one thing to, you know, have something local, but to have something special to Minnesota, I think is the key differentiator here. You know, there's something in the soil, and that's, you know, that's called terroir.
Right. Well, terroir is kind of why don't you give the expert?
Well, the fancy pants idea. And so we've been exploring this little thing called terroir, RIP Freddie. For the last 6 years that we've been growing hops here in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things that's changed in the last year itself, or just in the last year, was kind of this understanding of what we call or talk about as the new school of hops. Mm-hmm. So we're aware that beer has changed, especially craft beer has changed, like it's gone light speed in the last even 4 years, 5 years. Mm-hmm. Things are radically different than when I turned 21. It's wildly different.
Yeah, when I started 5 years ago, everybody was concerned with how many IBUs are in your IPA. Yeah. Now it's
like, don't put IBUs in your IPA.
Yeah, no. We're in a zero IBU world.
We're in IBU society.
Take some of those IBUs out.
Yeah, we strip them all out. So it's this new school of hops is focusing back on what brings a character or distinction between, and even between not just varieties, but also within varieties and hops and beer. And what that comes from a farm perspective, and we'll let the brewers in the room talk about the brewing side of the new school. But from the farm perspective, it's all about how was that hop grown? How and when was that hop harvested? And where was that hop grown? And really the big revolution, the shift that's kind of happening in the foundations of craft beer is that used to be you could build your beer by saying, I bought Cascade hops, and now I'm going to make a beer that will taste like what I think Cascade hops taste like. And what's not the case for any really variety of hop is you need to know where that Cascade hop was grown. You need to know how it was grown. You need to know when it was picked and how it was dried. Otherwise, yeah, you might know the alphas and the betas, but that's a calculation. You might know the total oils. That is barely correlated to anything. And you might have been able to rub them. But even that's not a great example of what a hop will actually do in a beer. And so those are the three pieces of information that I think brewers need to be able to access, and then also that allows so many more colors, mm-hmm. so many more colors on their palate to brew beer with.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because it's one of the things that I kind of wanted to get into, being a very not good home brewer. When I was picking out hops, it was usually, well, let's look at the alpha and the beta, and, you know, kind of your classical understanding of what properties are from each, you know, probably dried out 3-year-old bag of pellets you're picking off the shelf from whichever local brew store.
Yeah, well, and they're hard enough to load into a BB gun and kill a deer.
So. If you need to take care of some squirrels, you just load bad boys into a pellet gun and you're good to go.
Done.
So can you maybe, Christian or John, give me a little perspective on the picking out some of these hops? Because when I talk to brewers, it's so often it's not, I don't want to say it's not artistic, but it's process and it's recipe and it's development, and it's almost scientific sometimes, where it's testing and development and recipe. And I think that sometimes people do get lost in those things like the alphas and the betas and the numbers, as opposed to some of the intangibles that Eric was talking about, where a hop is grown, how it was grown, and the harvesting as well.
So kind of some of my first experiences with quote unquote locally grown hops, or at least Midwestern grown hops, kind of came back for me probably about 6 or 7 years ago, back when I was homebrewing. And I was using some of the quote unquote classical American hops, Willamette, Cascade, those main guys. And brewing with them, I realized that I was getting totally different flavors out of them, which at first for me was kind of off-putting.
Yeah.
But I realized that I was getting entirely different flavors than I was getting from any hop so far that I had found. Willamette being one, Sots being another, and Cascade being another. The Cascade for me, especially Midwestern grown, has a little slightly more herbal punch to it. Okay. I get definite citrus out of it, but the thing for me and my nose and my palate, I get lemongrass. Oh, that's the main thing that I get. And if I go places and taste lemongrass, I can't remember exactly where I was and who I was drinking, but I tasted a beer and it said it was grown with Midwestern or made with Midwestern hops. Tasted it. I got that flavor out of it. And I went up and asked the bar manager if they knew what hop was in it. And they said it was Midwestern Cascade. And I mean, that just kind of nailed it for me.
That's really cool. We're up against a break. I want to take a quick break and come back and talk more about the use of local hops. And I want to talk more about the labeling and the talking and advocating from that point of sale to consumers about beers being made with local hops. Are you listening to the Minnesota Beercast? We'll be back after this on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast. Lots of hops edition. Hops, hops, hops. The hops.
I kind of thought you were going to go with like a hip-hop music theme, but you flipped the script.
I've been on a Zeppelin kick, what can I say?
Misty Mountain.
Right? Nothing
wrong. When the levee breaks.
Well, Misty Mountain hops, and plus, what's up? As long as it's got hops in it.
Huh? Oh, yeah, that's good. I thought you were... Okay, I see what you're doing. I got you. I hear you. Hey, a quick reminder, we do still have spots available for our Oktoberfest trip to Germany. They've extended the deadline because there's still some demand out there. So I think a few spots have been added even. So if you want to join us in Munich for Oktoberfest, and I don't see why you wouldn't, go to beercasttrip.com to get all the information.
Yeah, folks, I want to make a plea. I visited some family this last weekend, and my mother-in-law said, oh, I heard there's still room. So please, if you're thinking about it, book your seat now so I don't have to go to Germany with my mother-in-law. Thanks. when we left off, just kidding, she's a wonderful lady, don't kill me. When we left off, we were talking hops, and Christian was kind of giving us his lowdown on using some local hops and kind of the concept of that terroir. And John, I was going to kind of get your perspective on I guess the science versus art concept of using local hops.
Well, back when I was homebrewing, I didn't really get a chance to use a lot of local Midwestern hops, or at least didn't think so. I wasn't really paying attention that much back then to where they were from, just what they were, what the descriptors were. I'm like, that sounds great.
I just assumed most of it was all coming from the Northwest when I was homebrewing, but I never gave two
thoughts. It's a very safe assumption even today.
Yeah, right.
But, I mean, as far as, I guess switching gears, using hops at a commercial level, mm-hmm. Local hops, specifically Mighty X hops, mm-hmm. Our most recent project with them is we used 100% of their crystal hops. And we've used crystal hops before at Dangerous Man, and they are usually anywhere else, like out west or what have you, have a pretty a standard like descriptor, a little bit of floral, a little bit of like nondescript citrus, some earthy notes. when I was out in San Diego last August for like a tech conference for the brewing industry, and I ran into
Ben Boo.
Yes. He was presenting a poster about the terroir of Minnesota hops. And I got to talking with him. I'm like, what are you most excited about as far as your hops? He's like, well, do you like crystal hops? I'm like, I do like crystal hops. And we used a lot of crystal hops right when we opened. My boss, Rob, also loves crystal hops. And we haven't had them in a while. I'm like, okay, yeah, go on. He's like, ours, if I may say, are like really bold lemon character. I'm like, ooh, I like lemon. Kind of really in anything hop-wise. He's like, well, you'll really love these then. We should, you know, talk when we get back to Minnesota. I'm like, great, cool. So that stuck with me out of all the things I did see, him being somebody I knew, and it was a very well laid out poster, and everything on it was wonderful.
Chief agronomist of Mighty Axe Hops and chief poster designer of Mighty Axe Hops.
Yes, it was very eye-catching. Had I not known him, I wouldn't have went up there anyway, because it looked, excuse me, a lot different from the others. I digress. So when I got a chance to use these crystal hops, Eric, you talked me into buying like the last of your lot.
And our salesman.
Yes.
That's what Kaylee's here for.
probably a tough sell.
Yeah. But I said, yeah, I'll take them. Ben talked to me about them. I do want to use them. So I used them in bits and bobs and a few things and decided we had a slot open to do just like a one-off IPA.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to use the rest of them in there, which was a fairly considerable amount for crystal hops. So designed an IPA around those hops and also used local Minnesota Malt Works Pilsner malt and some of their wheat, too. So it was doing local malt, local hops. The beer that we have here that y'all have tried already.
We're drinking right now, actually.
Yes.
And if you're listening to this podcast and not drinking, as long as you're, you know, just don't do it while you're driving, but you really should drink.
It's the only thing that makes this show tolerable.
You can't talk about hops and not have a beer. This is a daily struggle of mine.
Not wrong. But yeah, this aptly named Terroir IPA, some inspiration there for right. what, yeah.
It's 6.6 ABV.
Yep.
And I'm reading the label here. Can 618 contains beer. It's your 900th batch, which...
That was also...
kind of fun.
Very cool.
Yeah, that definitely wasn't planned when it came up. I'm like, oh, this is actually batch 900. So I told them about that, and that's also pretty cool on top of everything else in it. But the expression of the hops were definitely what Ben said and more. At least like to my palate, I get fresh lemon, I get candied lemon, I get one of my coworkers said quite a bit of lemongrass, and if like I wouldn't have picked that out if she hadn't have said it again, like kind of that suggestion.
I hate that. If anybody knows you know who's the worst at that is Michael Agnew. If you ever go drink with Agnew, I'll be sitting there drinking something. He'll be like, oh, I get like notes of black pepper. It's like, dude, you just ruined this beer for me, man. Like, I was really enjoying this, and now you said something, and now all I taste is black pepper. Thanks, dude.
Right. There are certain of my coworkers that, you know, are good and or bad at that, but we usually have a kind of an unwritten rule like, hey, try it, formulate in your head, and we'll have a discussion about it, which was fine because we already kind of agreed on stuff. And she's like, I get a lot of lemongrass. I'm like, you know what? Took a sip. I'm like, I could pick that out too. And then underneath it all, it kind of has this like herbal, kind of earthy spice, a little, for me, a bit of cardamom. It kind of just wraps all together. Yeah,
the cardamom I could
really
see,
nice.
Which is kind of unexpected. I wouldn't expect to taste, you know, bits of cardamom in there, but it's got notes of that, right? Not in an overwhelming sense in any way, but it's got just it's very in there in a very subtle way,
right? And I would have never thought before to use crystal hops in the amount that we used, and it wasn't an insane amount. It was dry hopped at like 3.5 pounds per barrel, but for crystal, that's a lot. And I definitely wouldn't have used like West Coast or grown anywhere else like Descript crystal that I was used to in the past. I'm like, man, it's a good like team player, but not a good solo hop, at least in my opinion. But it was really excited to use this. I'm like, I'm going to bring out all the lemon possible out of here.
That's neat. So when you are formulating this, do you do your recipe based off of, you know, the numbers that are given to you based on the alpha and the beta, or is it really a lot of it come down to some of the factors that Eric mentioned, the how it was grown and where, and the harvesting, the when and how it was packed and dried, the preservation method? How much of that factors into your recipe development?
It's a little bit of both. It kind of depends on a few things, but usually, if I see a hop, I'm like, oh, these are the descriptor notes. Okay, I'll work backwards from flavor. And yes, IBUs do, play, alpha acids and things do play something into that, but I'm more interested in pulling out everything I possibly can out of that hop. If it says it's A, B, or C, I want to get A, B, or C out of there, and maybe something completely different that it doesn't necessarily say on there, but
yeah,
some synergy. It's like, oh, okay, I got A, B, and C, and D, and E as well. Plus, on the plus side, like knowing everybody, or mostly everybody at Mighty Axe, and being able to have like a discourse with the sales manager, the farmer, the agronomist, like everybody.
It's easy when it's your wife.
Well, I wasn't going to say that. Sure, sales manager / wife.
No husband ever says that. Not a smart one anyway.
But anyway, knowing everyone and be able to have a discourse and talk more in depth about it is also very nice, extremely helpful. Being able to go visit the farm and see where everything comes from like start to, well, I haven't been out there near harvest, but I hope to see everything to its fruition. But so far I've got to see, humble beginnings to where they're at now, and I hope to see it all through to kind of complete my experience. I like having that full experience, and it's nice that it is so close and that the terroir, especially for this hop, is fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's delicious as can be. And 80 acres, it's you guys could that's plenty of room for a tour. You guys could have folks out there, and maybe in the fall when things are harvesting, you could have get a beer release going for harvest time.
Well, our next tour is July 13th. Those are public tours on Saturdays.
They're free.
There you go.
Then we'll have not a tour, but a miniature beer fest style event focused on the terroir and other important characteristics of hops grown here on August 10th.
That
so you said special tour. I say here's a couple tours.
Magic. All right, let's take a little break. I do want to talk a little more about terroir when we come back after this next break. You're listening to the Minnesota Beercast on AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast, your all things hops edition. Make sure to follow the show on iHeartRadio. Get the iHeartRadio app if you haven't yet. I don't know what's wrong with you. I can't help you. But get it and hit the little podcast button. Type in Minnesota Beercast. You'll see our channel up there. All of our archived shows are available. Plus, if you hit the little follow button, you'll get notifications when new episodes are posted.
Hey,
it's amazing.
It's magic.
It's incredible.
Let the magic internet elves bring you the show every week. Pretty sure that's how the internet works. There's elves
it's
in there.
It's full of elves.
They live in the cloud.
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
That's what's in the cloud, yes.
Yeah. Bill it's a Gates. Cloud of elves.
Yeah. Bill Gates built them a house in the
Hogwarts
clouds,
Hogwarts
right?
Has house elves, and the internet has cloud elves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely.
They're closely related.
Cousins. Elf cousins.
This show's just gotten really dumb.
What are we doing here?
All right. Let's get back to the hops. We are joined by Mighty Axe Hops, and we've got folks from Dangerous Man and Lakes and Legends joining us as well. When we left off, we were talking about, hops.
Great guess.
I want to talk a little more about terroir. The question that I had for Eric and Kaylee is the concept of terroir, terroir, I guess, is what earth coming through the plant, right? The most basic idea of terroir.
Terroir is a fancy word for a very simple term, which just means where something is from affects how it tastes.
Right. So the hops that you guys are using in these beers, how did you, develop or choose, I guess, the hops and the terroir that's affecting the hops. If you've got different flavors that are affected by where things are grown, did you just throw out a whole bunch of hop seeds and see what's going to taste good based on them being grown here? Or did you have an idea of what you thought would go well with our local terroir? Or how did you come to the place now where you've got different varieties that are being cultivated here and working well in the Midwest terroir?
Okay. So, well, when we started, we were growing hops that we thought tasted good. Mm-hmm. Had an experience of terroir at all before. And the experience of terroir and the other differences that we can unlock in characteristics and aroma based on how we're growing them and when and how we're harvesting them have come along later. I mean, this is our sixth year, mm-hmm. and you know, we've just reached the point of, you know, hop growing experience, beer brewing experience, and like kind of the research, hop research world catching up where like, we're putting this flag in the ground and we're saying, look, you know, Minnesota grown Cascade here has this unique experience. Minnesota grown Chinook has this unique experience. Minnesota grown Zeus has this unique experience. And that's where those new names all came from was, you know, this is real. This isn't like hocus pocus, marketing, gimmick,
not a marketing scheme,
lying, crap, whatever. This is based in real science and real experience with real beers, real craft brewing.
The Chinook hops are really, really surprising because, you know, instead of pine, it goes full pineapple in the other direction. It's so distinct. And that's, you know, that is one hop of ours that is strictly terroir. We pick that yeah. at classic timing, like people would pick it out west, and it's still coming through as pineapples and dank earth instead of like the very like, you know, rich pine and forest floor.
So let's talk about that a little bit because we've kind of danced around it, but we haven't really dove into the fact that you've got what would consider traditional hop varieties that you've yep. rebranded, right? Based
Correct.
On the flavors coming through with this local terroir.
Mm. Yeah, they're house varieties that are defined by terroir is what we got going on.
So let's talk about what they are and what you're offering to
for sure.
commercial yeah. brewers and
home brewers as well. Too. Yeah, that's
yeah.
right. So we've got
just today.
Yeah, just today. We got, well, Julius is our word for our Cascade. Our Cascade, based on being grown here, based on being picked when we pick it, all these different things, right? Shows up with a lot more orange, a lot more peach, and even gets into the sweet world of vanilla, kind of like a dreamsicle, depending on usage in the
Sounds
beer.
Good.
John can talk to that one. That's in the Dangerous Man Cream Ale. And then I'll quick, the other two are Xenia for Zeus. And that is comes from a conversation that we had 4 or 5 years ago. This was the first hop where we started playing with these other, not just growing it here, of course, all of our hops are grown here, mm-hmm. but playing with other ways that you can affect the hop's flavor based on what the farm does.
Mm-hmm.
The Zeus Trezenia transition came out of a conversation with Nico Tonks at Fair State Brewing Cooperative, where he was like complaining to me about how he wanted Zeus that was consistently dank and not onion garlic. And if you tell anyone in the brewing industry what a CTZ or Zeus smell like, onion garlic. It's a bittering hop. It's crap. But all of the Xenia is intended to be dry hopped with. It is not intended to be bittered. And then Tropica is the rebrand of Chinook. That's that pineapple, very heavy terroir influenced beer, that very terroir influenced hop.
So let's get to John's take on the use of Julius, and then when I come back, I've got a question for you on again more on terroir.
Yeah, so we trialed the Julius in our cream ale, which is one of our flagships, and we, for a long time now, it used to, speaking of crystal, we used to use nondescript crystal from source from wherever in the cream ale. In the last couple of years, we've just been using anything that had like a similar kind of very subtle like citrus or fruity note and floral. In that beer, the hops definitely don't take center stage, but they're a nice round end note. You get some of them if you kind of know what you're looking for. So, trialed some of the Julius in there, knowing that had, you know, the orange, the peachiness, the all those other lovely descriptors for it.
Yeah.
And really liked how it played. So, and then also gave it to my boss, Rob. He's like, yeah, this is delicious. can we do it again? I'm like, well, yes, of course we can do it again. If you want a hard switch over, we can. It's like, yeah, sure. Yeah, go for it.
These are great conversations you guys are having, by the way. It's a hard switch to Mighty Axe A+.
I know. It's just the raised eyebrows. Sure, go for it.
How does the vanilla come through in the beer?
Oh, that's an awesome one. I think.
Yeah, that's a conversation about biotransformation.
Well, let's tease biotransformation for the next segment, because we're coming up.
That's going to be a big topic.
Sounds like it's going to take up the entire next segment, because that's two big words right next to each other. So it's going to be probably at least 9-10 minutes.
At least.
We'll just block off 30.
We'll consult the elves in between segments. We'll come back after this on the Minnesota Beercast, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Final segment of this week's edition of the Minnesota Beercast. Saturday, we will be at ERX Motor Park in Elk River for the Lupulin IPA Invitational. Reminder, still tickets available, so come on out and enjoy a million amazing IPAs and say hello to me and Schmitty.
I'm looking forward to having my palate ruined.
Yeah, ruin my palate.
It's going to be a great
day. Abuse it. Treat it horribly. I like it.
We are hanging out doing the hop show today. We're hanging out with Mighty Axe Hops. We've got Dangerous Man. We've got Lakes and Legends in the house. Go get yourself some new hops from Northern Brewer and the like. They've got Julius, they've got Tropica, and they've got Xenia. They are all rebranded adaptations with local terroir from your traditional hop varieties. I wanted to ask you about the idea to, I guess, kind of rebrand these hops, highlighting the local terroir. Did you guys have, I guess, trepidation in telling people that, you know, the Xenia is Zeus, but it's really Xenia because now you've gone out drinking with Michael Agnew and he's told you it tastes like pepper. Like, now you've got that in your head that it's Zeus already, and you've got a tainted conception of what it is, because it's that pre-existing notion, right?
Yeah.
Like, to me, if you want me to think that it's Xenia, then tell me it's Xenia, but if you've told me it's Zeus, damn it, now I know it's Zeus.
Yeah, that's exactly what we had trepidations about, is how do we communicate this effectively? It's interesting that the idea of terroir is very, very easily communicated in wine.
Mm-hmm.
People understand that a French red is different than a California red based on where the grapes are grown. So in beer, it's a little different. We have things called a New England IPA. That doesn't necessarily mean any of the ingredients are from New England. It means that's where the beer originated. So the concept of where things are grown and that affecting how everything tastes, totally, you know, it totally flips the script. So we had trepidations, and we definitely, you know, sat down for a long time. And I think I busted into the office one day and I said, let's rename some hops. And that's kind of how we got to it, because in my first couple of weeks of selling, I realized, wow, it is really hard to break the wheel where, you know, the understanding of Cascade that's grown out west versus Cascade.
Cascade Grandpa Hop. I don't want to use that in my IPAs anymore.
Right. You know, you bring a spot sheet to people that has Cascade Centennial and Zeus on it, and people are like, what are you doing?
Yeah, what do you got?
Why? You know, and then we have to sit down and have that conversation. It's not us. You know, it's not, it's not that we're... Eric's being very distracting over here on the other side. The audience can't see it, but I'm trying to make sure nothing's like flying at me.
It's a no Wet Willy Studios, Eric.
Yeah,
the audience can't see it, but just
very inappropriate.
No Wet Willys.
Yeah. That rule was put in place specifically for Schmitty, so he knows.
That's what the sign is for. You didn't read the sign when you came in.
Yeah, he understands the consequences.
So, were you worried that if you went that route and weren't forthright with what these hop varieties were traditionally, that folks would think you're gonna try to pull the wool over their eyes and do something?
No,
I mean, I would say, yeah, like, that's been done.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
it's been done for
Pacific
sure.
Pacific Gym and or Jade is just Cascade grown in New Zealand, but it sounds cool, right? And, you know, it's, we don't want to go to the point where people don't know what they're buying. This is about kind of rearranging the conversations that we were having, where we're saying, look, what we do here matters first. So that means this is Julius. But that's a cascade grown here, harvested this way, dried in this way, grown in this way, treated this way to create this experience. The culmination of all these different things that are going on means this really isn't Cascade. When I tell you Cascade, you imagine this. When you brew with this beer, you're not going to get what you're imagining.
Yeah.
It's about like trying to be effectively communicating without lying and without, hiding what the story is.
Yeah, and I think, that idea is best illustrated when we go back to one of the first things, Christian, when you said when you were out drinking and you talked about a beer you ordered and somebody said, this is made with Midwest Cascade, it might have even been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that idea and that concept kind of travels through the theme, where if you've got a local producer making beer with that local hop, and not only that, but you've got the point of sale pushing that fact to the consumer and saying, hey, this is what's being made and this is what it's being made with. And I think the challenge is making sure that that's illustrated through to the consumer, saying, hey, this is why it's important that you know that this beer is being made with this hop, because this is what you should expect from it, not your necessarily traditional Cascade profile, but a profile of a Midwest hop with this local terroir.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny point from the opposite side. The Zeus that we're using for Mighty Axe, the Xenia that we're using for Mighty Axe, we actually sourced it specifically for Alpha Acid. So not for all these fun things. We wanted good old-fashioned bitterness.
Bittering, yeah.
And at our place, we have an evaporative condenser, which is essentially, if you imagine a still, if you're distilling, it's just a big pipe that comes up and off, sprays water through it, takes all that steam, and actually dumps it inside. So our hood doesn't go outside. So all of the aromas from the kettle go directly into the building.
Oh.
The first time we brewed with Zeus or Xenia, we got Fruit Loop cereal blowing out of the kettle. You know what I mean? That was the first smell that we got. So for us, it was like, whoa, we're dealing with something totally different here. And, them actually being rebranded, totally legit for me. So I just kind of saying that you can expect it from the opposite end. I actually had the experience of firsthand, like, whoa, that's not onion and garlic. Right. That's absolutely wonderful.
There you go, Nico.
Kind of funny.
There you go, Nico.
Yeah.
Oh, he knows. It's all of that Fair State Red Can IPA is a lot of Zeus, or now Xenia, in the dry hop. So
how do you get that point across to consumers to say, hey, this is now Xenia, this is the flavor profile, this is what you can expect? Do you let the beer speak for itself? Do you try to get that on your marketing materials? Do you have servers and wait staff try to explain that? What is the challenge in getting that descriptor to the
That's people? The challenge. So slowly but surely, we're talking to, so currently, like, we sit down and talk to all our brewers. That's kind of the nice part about having the farm out here, is that you can sit down and have a conversation with the people who are growing your hops.
Mm-hmm.
It's an hour and a half away from the Twin Cities. You can come visit, you can come see things, you can come select your lots as a brewer here in Minnesota and even in surrounding states. We're starting with the brewers, because the brewers are the people who utilize it. They're the ones that are hands-on with it. Slowly but surely, we are talking to distributor reps.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a great point to be able to go to local establishments and say, hey, here's a beer that's made with local ingredients. There is a differentiation and a selling point there for them. So we're talking to them to get the conversation started. Everything has to filter down.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage people to use the new names on them. And if they don't want to use the new names, they don't have to.
Yeah, but why wouldn't you?
Oh, no, right?
That's a great question.
part of the point of the new names is not just to help communicate that they're different, but just to the brewer, but to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of what, if you're sending it that, you're sending at the retail section of the IPA retail section in your liquor store, and it's 700 beers deep, and you're like, I want an IPA. And you're trying to pick it out by what it says on the can. There's a can there that says Julius IPA made with Minnesota hops. You're like, cool, I'm going to take that one, and I'm going to try that one this time.
We wanted it to catch people's attention really, really quickly. And to do that, you know, we picked out names that had A endings. And
well, sound like something that you want to drink. I want to drink Julius. I want to drink Xenia. I want to drink Tropica.
Yeah, anything with the ripe, sweet orange and hints of dreamsicle and touches of vanilla. I'm on board.
Yeah, sign me up.
Anytime, any day of the week. But I think we're almost out of time. Is that right, Drew? I hear the music.
Yes, our time is winding down, unfortunately, for this week's episode.
Oh, we're just about out of hops. I'm sorry, folks.
Well, you know, we're only an hour and a half away.
There you have it. Thanks so much to our guests. Thanks to Lakes and Legends. Thanks to Dangerous Man. Thanks to Mighty Axe for coming in. It's been a wonderful show. Thanks so much for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be back next week with a brand new episode from the Lupulin IPA Invitational. Hope to see you on Saturday. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Talk to you next week. Cheers.
Sometimes it makes me feel mellow.